Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, January 5th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get a preview of activities at the Jack, including the one-night stand presentations and poetry omnibus. Emily Wright and Judge Keith Levy will be here to tell us about the Success In and Out program. And we'll hear a selection from Mudrooms, those interviews, specials, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today we begin a series looking at climate change and Alaska Native people. We start by hearing about impacts to the community of Kivalina. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
Coastal Chukchi Sea waters near Kivalina once reliably froze in the early fall, but now freeze later in the year. In recent years, severe storms, some with hurricane-force winds, have caused flooding, erosion, and property damage in Kivalina. Standing near the village runway, City Administrator Janet Mitchell recalls a night in 2005 when waves 10 to 15 feet high were crashing nearby, and everyone who could turned out to try and protect the runway, a vital transportation link.
They laid everything they could find. They dismantled a DC-10 plane that had crashed in 2005, and they tore that apart, and they broke it into pieces, laid it out here. We didn't have sandbags at the time. We just had to use local material. One of them was an old truck, and they laid it out here. But the surge is so strong, it just got taken out.
Kivalina voted in the 1990s to relocate and has been working ever since to find the $100 million or so dollars needed to do that. Agencies have put some $3 million toward planning and research. The village is also working to get a road built so they can evacuate to safety. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers bought the village 10 to 15 years by building a rock wall in 2007. In a 2009 erosion assessment report, the Corps identified 26 Alaskan communities whose viability is threatened by storm surge flooding and erosion. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Also in Alaska, a handful of university students have created Yupik learning books. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
That is the sound of students learning at the Ayapunlitnarvik School in Bethel. They're using books recently released from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The books are called Bijereyaramta Lijumtelcha, or in English, Teaching Our Way of Life. The project was started in 2009 with a grant that was awarded by the United States Department of Education. A group of UAF students who were Yupik teachers were asked by UAF to look at their materials and decide which subjects fell short in Yupik. UAF Associate Professor of Linguistics and Foreign Languages, Sabine Ziegman, says the students identified three themes.
We identified ceremonies and celebrations, traditional games and toys, and survival as really important themes. And the teachers then went out to interview elders.
Ziegman was the principal investigator for the grant. She says the teachers then compiled the knowledge and separated the information into different grade levels. The three-year project ended last year, resulting in a set of 38 Yupik learning books for students from kindergarten to sixth grade. Bethel resident Carol Olton was a part of the project. She is also a second-grade teacher at the Yupik Immersion School in Bethel. She says books like these will be useful in a place like Bethel, where Yupik isn't very common in the younger generation.
It seems like less and less students come in to learn Yupik. There were more back in the day when people were moving to Bethel. I hope books like these will give kids incentive to learn Yupik early on.
The books are in the Central Yupik dialect, but can be adapted to other dialects and are available as e-books through the UAF website. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National News. National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, March 14th to the 18th. Information on convention services at ahcnm.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on January 5th, 2015. A big Happy New Year to all listeners out there. It's about 5 minutes after the hour, and in the studio now is the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Ms. Nancy DeCherney. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, Scott. How are you? Happy New Year.
Yeah, it's nice to have you in on a Monday. Usually you're here on Thursdays.
Yeah, that's kind of a change for me. I shift gears here. Yeah, we have a lot of things going on in January at the JAC, and I appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk about them. We'll take them sort of one at a time.
Sounds good.
Starting tomorrow is the first of our one-night stand series. We give individual artists grants. Annually there are grants awarded, and if people are interested in applying, they can get information about that on our resources page on our website. But
about how many of those do you give a year?
Give
or take.
Oh, we have about $6,000 to $8,000 that we can give out, so it varies. Certainly the wearable art exhibit, the fundraiser, helps us in part fund that. So if you got your wearable art tickets, you're already part of this situation. This year we gave out quite a few, more than usual, I would say. And one of the things that we have, panelists of artists, people apply, I look at who's applied, like, do we have fiber artists, do we have, you know, what kind of art is being, and then we convene a panel of local judges who are in similar, disciplines, and they decide which of the groups should be awarded. Each artist comes in and makes their appeal, talks about their thing. And one of the panels several years ago, Mike Beasley, said, you know, whatever happens to this money, like these people, we give these people this money, and then what? And so we decided then that it would be a really good idea for the artists to come and report out. And so that's what the one-night stands are, is an opportunity for the people who have received funding from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, individual artist grants, to come in and talk about what it is they did and how it affected them and what it's doing for the community. And the first one up on Tuesday, which is tomorrow, is Lael Rogers, a young woman who is doing films, and her presentation will be called Indie Film Short Presentation. I'm not exactly sure what all she's been doing. And the sort of format for this is that you just, the person is there, she'll probably show some clips of what she's been working on, and then people can just ask her questions. It's kind of a conversation more than it is anything else.
And do you do this in the big room or the smaller gallery?
We just do it in the gallery, so it's pretty intimate.
Oh.
Yeah, and one of the ones I really enjoyed one time was Tony Newman had received a grant from us to put together his Sarah Palin book, and it was fascinating to learn how he came up with the cartoons that he did during that period, and also sort of to reflect on what was going on historically. But anyway, so we have several of them, like I said. Next Monday on the 12th, Dan Hobson was given a grant to go to an Alex Degrassi workshop. Dan, as you know,
has
a couple of CDs out, is a local guitarist of some renown, and so I'm sure this will be a nice opportunity to hear some music by Dan. On the 14th, that week in Wednesday, Avril Valise will talk about digital illustration and working with a print shop. People probably have seen Avril's work if they are not familiar with her name, so try to catch that. On January 19th, M.K. McNaughton is talking about moving studio practice to public art practice. And she's got a public art project happening right now, the Juno Giant puppet thing.
Right.
And I don't know if that's related to this, but she wanted to go from her working as she had been working to stretching herself a little bit. And I think that's kind of what is going on with these. A lot of, if they're established artists, pushing themselves a little bit. I remember that Kathy Hawker one time went from working very small, meticulous work that she was accustomed to doing to big canvases just to see. So after MK on the 26th, a Monday, Sarah Everett, also a young person, is doing Intro to Calico 2. I believe that's going to actually be finished in May, but she's going to be talking about where she is now and how the process is happening. And on Tuesday, the 27th, Maria Offer is going to talk about memoir writing. She was writing some reflections. So it's an opportunity for you to meet some artists and ask them questions and get to know more about what they do and find out if it's something you might want to do.
Absolutely, and those are all recipients of the individual artist grants.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect if somebody wanted to review the list that you just talked about, they can find that at
thejack.org. There's this nice bright poster. See that?
Very nice. Very nice.
Yes, that was designed by Sue Ann Lager, or Sue Ann Randall, and we've enjoyed it so much over the years that we just keep using it because it's kind of eye-catching. So, and it's on the website, of course. So stay tuned and do come out for that. In the evenings at 5 o'clock.
One night stands. All right. What else is going on?
Well, on Thursday, you know, we do this program, and it's been going on for maybe, I want to say, 9 years, where local poets write poetry, and they get put on the bus, the city bus system. I don't know. Do you take the bus?
I do. I'm a bus user.
So have you seen the poetry?
I have. I love it.
Yeah. So it's a real nice sort of thing. Every year, poets of all ages are invited to write poetry, and the poets are by necessity short. They have to fit on the placards, so there's a little structure there, and then they're adjudicated, and 26 or so poems are selected. Printing Trade Company very nicely prints them on the placards, and then what's happening on Thursday is the winners of this year's contest are going to be there to read their poems, receive their awards, and the poetry placards will be presented to the bus. So,
yeah, that should be nice. What time does that start?
That, I think, is starting at 6:30. I have a list of the winners. It's pretty exciting, actually.
I'd love to hear it.
There's Heath Williams, Robert Fagan, Richard Stokes, Mary Capabianca, Clara Miller, Mary Lou Spartz, Sing Vert Uruz, I'm not sure that I'm saying that name correctly, Holly Denton, who, by the way, also got an individual artist grant a couple years ago to a writing conference. So here she is writing poetry for us. Linda Buckley, Ann Fuller, Marjorie Menz, Heather Berg, did I say Margot Maring? Amy McLeod, Jill Matheson, Mary Lou Spartz, and Anna Kramer. And then we had one youth entry, Ellen Antaya. So often we have a
some
lot of
familiar
students.
Names
yeah.
there, too.
Yeah. So come down and read these poems with these folks. There'll be cookies and crumpets, that sort of thing. It's a nice opportunity.
Thinking back, you said it's been going on for about 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what inspired? Were you one of the founders?
No. And I'm desperately thinking through my brain. Kristen, somebody or other, her name, she's moved from town. She had been, I think, in England or someplace where she had seen poems on the bus. She was a big poetry fan, and she thought this would be a great thing to do in our community. And so she started it, and I think one of the first years that we were involved, we actually had the bus. Everybody got on the bus and drove around town, and the poets were on the bus also, and they would read their poems
oh, wow.
to the bus riders. And in fact, the bus driver, who was that particular year's bus driver, or the person that was driving the bus, was not at first particularly enamored of the idea. He just was like, oh, right, sure.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, he was ready to sign on and be, he's writing poetry now. And for 2 years, he coordinated the program for us. And like I said, Kristen had moved on a couple of years after that. And we've managed Carol Race was the person that coordinated it this year with Emily Wall. And Ray Sang, the bus driver, is doing it from Skagway. He now lives up there. And next year, C.N. Murphy will be the person coordinating it. So it's just a nice opportunity for you to share your thoughts with people.
Absolutely. And I know there's also advertisements next to the, so that you'll have like poetry and then advertisements. Does CBJ, does the bus transit, do they donate that space?
I think that they donate the space for the poetry, but
great.
I think the advertisements, they must get money from.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But for us, they just, that's a thing that they do. Because I think one of the, when I first started in this job a gajillion years ago, up in the basement that we had, I was kind of puzzling over, you know, like, what is this bus program? And a guy came in who was a regular bus rider, and he said, "I don't care what else you do, but this is the most important program the Arts Council puts on. So whatever you do, make it happen." So we've been going.
You know, I was speaking of the basement, I was walking by the other day and, like, looking at that space compared to the Jack, I was like, how did you guys do that?
Well, it was a lot of work with a lot of people, I have to say. You know, the community just has come together, and I'm excited by everything that goes on over there. And I think you've got one more thing coming in that's going to talk about something that's going on over there.
Yeah.
Shortly.
Yeah.
I mean, this we've got the inaugural ball, for heaven's sakes. We need to mention that.
Yeah. And just to back up for one second, though, and cap that off, we have the 6:30 is the One Night Stand presentations on Tuesday. And then Poetry Omnibus is on Thursday at 6:30.
Yes, actually, the One Night Stands are from 5 to 7.
Okay, excuse me.
And the Poetry Omnibus is at 6:30, and it will be happening sort of simultaneously with the House Jacks, who will start about 7:30, I believe.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to go from one to the other pretty easily. And I do want to mention that the inaugural ball, the Jack is the overflow and the after party for the inaugural ball goers. And I think they're nearly out of the reserved seating, but we have plenty of the general seating and or general tickets available. Everyone is invited to come.
Jack.org,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. Tickets. Absolutely. So what else? Anything else you want? Any questions?
I don't think so, unless you can think of something else you'd like to share right now.
I do want to say something.
Yeah.
Often we have the calendaring meeting on Martin Luther King Day, which is the opportunity for everybody in the community to get together and argue over weekends because there's only 52 of them. So and we don't all want to have our fundraisers on the same one. But this Martin Luther King Day is so busy on the Jack schedule that I am moving it to March 2nd. So if you were thinking about coming to the calendaring meeting, do think about it and put it on March 2nd. Even if you can't come to that, if you already know that you're planning to do your fundraiser or big event, make sure that we know about it and get it on the community calendar well in advance so that other plans don't get made.
Yeah, that is a really smart meeting to have. We've all complained before. I can't believe they scheduled it the same night as my gig.
Yeah, well, you know, we all got to work together or that's going to happen. You know, who knew there were only 52 weeks? Dang it.
Right?
Yes.
All right, Nancy the Attorney. Well,
thanks
for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and Happy New Year and all that.
Yeah, and here's a selection from the House Jacks, who will be playing Thursday night at the Jack, thanks to Juno Jazz and Classics and you.
And the world lets us be just you. Don't miss the annual Christmas tree recycling event sponsored by CBJ and Capital Landfill, January 2nd through the 31st. This free recycling service is offered Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Capital Landfill. All trees must be free of lights, block, ornaments, and tinsel. That's Christmas tree recycling at the Capital Landfill, January 2nd through the 31st. For more information, call 780-6009. This message brought to you by CBJ.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 5th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's about 23 minutes after the hour. And with me now in the studio is the Deputy Director of Labor Relations for the state, Ms. Emily Wright. Nice to see Emily.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in today. And also District Court Judge, Mr. Keith Levy. Judge Levy, thanks for coming in today.
Good afternoon.
All right. So we are here to talk about the Success In and Out program, which I am a big supporter of because I had the chance to play music there with Colette one year. It's a great day from what I could tell. I really enjoyed myself, and it seemed like everyone involved did too. Could one of you start by sort of describing that day and the program that surrounds it so our listeners can sort of envision what it is?
Sure. I guess I'll start. It's a day that we spend at the jail every year. It is designed for inmates who are generally within a year of release, and it's a conference like any other conference, and I think it really has two purposes. One is to provide information about resources that are available in the community to help people succeed once they're released, and the other is to just convey the fact that, and it is really remarkable in this community, that people really care and do want to see people succeed. And we have about, each year, about 60 or 70 volunteers get involved in the program.
Yeah, that's great. And sort of the underlying principle is to avoid recidivism, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And I was doing a little research, and I saw somewhere that most folks go back to prison within their first year of getting out. Is that true?
I think a recent study in Alaska showed within I think it looked at within 5 years, 2 out of 3. Actually.
Wow. Yeah. And so this event is completely designed to help avoid that. So Emily, how are you involved and how do you contribute to this?
So, this is my first year working with the program, and I'm super excited. I'm helping to set up one of the panels, but one of the things that we're working on this year and the reason for some of the outreach is we're looking for help from the community in the form of we do door prizes for inmates. We have food, breakfast, and lunch. And one of the things that I found out at our meeting, which I think is amazing, is that right now the inmates, as they're working, are earning money, and they contribute money to this program to keep it going. And they've rented a sound system, then they bought a sound system, and they pay for the tote bags, and it's just amazing. And so we're also looking for kind of to get a nest egg together so we can keep this program going. So I'm helping with those pieces. And just asking the community for any and all help.
Sure, and thinking of what help one could provide. It's anything thinking of somebody getting out of prison could possibly need any kind of support, right? Even if it's material goods such as clothing, to some sort of social support. Would you be interested in that as well?
I think we have. So I have a contact information. I think that that we would be up for anyone who's interested in helping keep the program going or participate in the program. And one thing I should say about the clothing, a super popular portion of the day is the fashion show former Judge Tricia Collins is in charge of. And it's a what not to wear to interviews and what to wear to interviews. And it's always very popular.
Yeah. So what we do is we have the several inmates will be selected to be models. We bring people in, and this year we're going to have a district attorney and a public defender modeling how not to dress for success. And then the inmates who are selected, we will get clothes for them that they can keep, and they will model them in the fashion show.
That sounds like a lot of fun. When is the actual date of this year's conference?
March 7th.
And is that usually like on a Saturday or Sunday?
It's a Saturday. We typically do it on a Saturday. We try to avoid Folk Fest, because some of our best participants are busy at that time. So, the other kind of help we can use besides things and money is, we do have a lot of volunteers that come to the jail that day. So about half the program is we have 9 different panels presenting information simultaneously. The participants get to select 4 of those, and then they'll rotate between their different panels. So one of the big things, one of the most popular ones, is employers come in and talk about job opportunities, education. Other things are substance abuse, addiction issues, mental health issues, peer support. So we have representatives from groups like AA and NA. and so people who are willing and able to contribute to those sorts of things also could participate in that way.
And if somebody does want to participate, who should they contact?
So Sharon Heidersdorf, who is the clerk of court, and her phone number is 463-4700.
Okay, and we'll give that again in a few minutes.
Okay.
Judge Levy, how many years have you been involved with this program?
I think I've been doing it 5 or 6 years when Judge Collins was, well, it's probably longer than that because she's been gone longer than that. I got involved, I think, the second year of the program, and I started participated in a fitness table. One of the tables we do is fitness, and we actually have some other remarkable athletes that come in and do that now. And then when Judge Collins retired, I took over as the head of it.
And before the interview, as a judge, as a district court judge, you've met many of these individuals.
Right. I will know a substantial number of them, and I've seen them in court. And, one of the great things about the program is that it's a chance for people to see judges, lawyers, and other members of the community that they may interact with in not so positive a way, to see them in a different light. And I think people really appreciate that.
Yeah, and for our listeners, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it still takes place sort of in the gymnasium And there are, you know, different tables. It's very sort of casual. It's fun. And, you know, Colette Costa entertains often. Right. And if you know Colette Costa, you know how that's going to go, and music and meeting these professionals from the community.
Yeah. We try to set it up like a professional conference. And so, you know, people get a lot of information. They get, you know, that's why the door prizes and things like that, but also a lot of resources and information.
And the fashion show, too.
And the fashion show.
So does it feel like it's working to you, Judge Levy? Is this effective?
You know, I'd love to do a blind study and, you know, take measurements. I don't have that. But I think a lot of what we do is so, in the criminal justice system, is sort of negative, and this is something positive. And I think certainly the feedback I get from the participants is that it's helpful to them. They get a lot of information. They're pointed in the right direction. Like anything else, ultimately, it's up to them what they're going to do with that. But I can't say objectively yes, it helps, but I think certainly there are a lot of people who get benefit from it. You
know. Okay. So this is the conference, the Success In and Out program. It's on March 7th, and Emily Wright and Judge Levy here are looking for support if you have something to give. Emily, could you give us a quick overview once more, a recap of a few things that you might be looking for?
Sure. So we're always happy to accept funds to help us build the program and keep it going. Door prizes, food, there's breakfast, lunch, and snacks. And if people have clothes that they might be interested in donating for the fashion show, that would be great. Or if they can think of anything else, feel free to call. And the person, again, is Sharon Heidersdorf, 463-4700.
Okay. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add? Are we missing anything? If somebody wanted to participate and actually come in and be part of the event, and maybe they're a professional in the community who wants to get involved, would they go through the same channel through Sharon at 463-7400?
Right.
Or
right,
4700?
Right. And we can't have, because of the nature of the thing, we can't have people just show up the day of the event, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, they should call Sharon, and, you know, they can talk about what they can contribute, and then she'll hook them up with the committee chair responsible for that area.
You can't just show up to see a Colette Costa concert.
Unfortunately not.
All right. Well, thanks again, you two. Anything else?
No.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And thanks for running this program.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 5th of January, 2015. It is Twelfth Night, the eve of Epiphany, the official end of the Christmas season. The poet Robert Herrick wrote, "Down with the rosemary, and so down with the bays and mistletoe, down with the holly, ivy all, wherewith ye dressed the Christmas hall." It used to be a big day in colonial America, particularly in Virginia. There was a big Twelfth Night ball. A king and queen were chosen. George and Martha Washington didn't do much for Christmas. They just went to church. But they had elaborate Twelfth Night celebrations. It's the birthday of the mathematician Stephen Cole Clanie, born in Hartford in 1909, his career mostly at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He worked with algorithms, one of the founders of recursion theory, a branch of mathematical logic, and a way to know whether certain kinds of mathematical problems are solvable or unsolvable, which led to the theory of computable functions, one of the building blocks of theoretical computers. Mr. Clanie was also a lifelong hiker, loved the woods, and his knowledge of mushrooms was legendary in Wisconsin. It's the birthday of the poet W.D. Snodgrass, born Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, 1926. Stella Gibbons, born London, 1902, author of Cold Comfort Farm, her parody of romance novels. Umberto Eco born in the Piedmont region of Italy, 1932, author of the novels The Name of the Rose, Foucault's Pendulum, The Cemetery of Prague. Eco once said he knew there were sections of his books that people just skip over, but that he thought it was important they be there. He said, you think of the next-to-last chapter of Ulysses, in which James Joyce just describes Leopold Bloom's entire kitchen, every drawer. Sometimes I happen to go back and read a drawer. The first time I read it, what was impressive and important was this ideal of describing everything. It's the birthday of Libby Cotton, born in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 1895, taught herself the guitar. She was a left-handed guitarist, best known for her song Freight Train, which she wrote when she was 11 years old. And it's the birthday of Jack Norworth, Philadelphia, 1879. He was an actor on Broadway, sometimes wrote song lyrics. And though he had never been to a baseball game, one day in 1908, he took some notes and he sat down and wrote the words to Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Albert von Tilzer, who had never seen a baseball game either, was the man who wrote the music. Here's a poem for today by Lewis Jenkins entitled January Again. January again, and the snow comes sudden and heavy. This is what we like best. This is what we paid our money for. Snow on snow, all day and all night, everything muffled, distant. Tomorrow, no school, no work, no worship service, no visitation of the sick, the poor, the widows, or the orphans. Whatever it was, nothing can be done about it now. Your old position has been filled. Your footsteps have been filled. The roads are filled, drifted shut. All directions are obliterated in the heavy snowfall. A poem by Lewis Jenkins, January Again, from Just Above Water, published by Holy Cow Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Cabot Creamery Cooperative, Northeast farm families whose legacy was built by making naturally aged cheddar cheese and other dairy foods. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right. Tune in this Wednesday night on KRNN at 6 p.m. for another Alaska Originals concert featuring Harrison B. Recorded live in the At 360 studio. Here's a little Harrison B. here.
am I talking right? And I'm working, I do them in my biggest light. And I'm feeling kind of hungry, I should grab a bite. And if you're dealing with the dealing, yeah, I've all this blight. I discover the world through these shades of light. And I'm a hint of notice till I lost my sight. Pick up a hammer and I start to write. On a stone of the wood, I know while I'm working and I'm rolling around, yeah. And all this light that across the world, day and the day and the night. And I'm working for more time to live.
Harrison B. right there. Again, that will be played on KRNN at 6 p.m. on Wednesday night. You can hear the entirety of Harrison B.'s Alaska Originals concert. And next week, we're getting close to Mudrooms. They'll be on Wednesday, January 14th. The theme is the rear view mirror. And getting ready for that, I thought we'd play a clip from the December 9th show, Accidents Happen. This was recorded on December 9th, 2014. Here's Seth Smith's story.
Hey, so our next speaker is Seth Smith. And Seth was born in a small town of 3,000 in western Montana and has lived most of his life there. He also spent a year or two growing up in both Houston and Florida, yet for the love of Rocky Mountains and family, always drew him back to Montana. Seth primarily enjoys outdoor activities and creating things with his hands. He spent the past few years working and schooling, trying to fit playtime in anywhere possible. Seth graduated as an electrical engineer last May and within a week was on a flight to Juneau to explore and work in this beautiful state. He now spends his time following his passions of biking, skiing, running, climbing, drumming, and getting used to actually having room for activities in his evenings again. Seth believes that our main purpose in life is to help others. He plans to use his education and creativity to one day create better tools for the medical industry. Please help me welcome Seth.
Yeah, you're going to have to drop that a little bit. Perfect. All right. You got it. Thank you. Sound good? Perfect. All right. All right. So I asked my family what I should do for this story when I figured out it was all about accidents. And they literally emailed me a list. Each person emailed me a list. They said, oh, there's dozens of accidents that you've done that would be, it'd be perfect for this. So go ahead and just, let me just brainstorm here and lay down a whole paragraph of things that you could talk about. So I'm just going to go with one that my brother came up with. I came from a small town of about 3,000. I went to a college that was just about 50 miles away from there, the University of Montana in Missoula. And so about my second year in the winter, I was driving a Jeep, and the brakes on it started squealing pretty bad when I'd stop. Just a horrible squeal would erupt from the wheels any time as I tried to press the brakes. So being the stereotypical Montanan, I would want to fix everything myself before I brought it to a mechanic. I would fix it with duct tape if I had to, just to not bring it to a mechanic and be able to say that I did it myself. So I ended up grabbing the tools one Sunday, midday, grab all the brake pads and the rotors, and my buddy Sean, and we end up finding the closest garage that we can get into that's warm and free. It's 50 miles away in my hometown of Hamilton. So we drive down there, and it takes me about 3 hours to replace my brakes. Everything's going just fine. Get everything done. It all works as far as I know. And so then before we leave town, we decide to stop over at this little steakhouse at the edge of town and grab a bite to eat. So it's late on a Sunday night. There's not really too many people out in this small town. I end up trying to park in a parking spot. And when I press the brake, it feels like concrete. It doesn't move one bit. And so I just put all my weight onto the brake there. And my Jeep rolls about 8 feet and then finally stops. And so I look bewildered at my buddy Sean in the passenger seat and put it in reverse and just drive back and park in the spot. Well, Sean's a medicinal marijuana patient. And so before we go in for dinner, he wants to medicate himself. So I leave him to his own devices and I go in and grab us a table. And then he comes in shortly after. We get a big meal and a couple beers. And We're eating meal, and we start talking, well, what could have been the issue? And we kind of figure out, well, the brakes probably weren't properly bled. And so we realized that, well, it's coming up on 9, 10 o'clock at night. We both have things going on the next morning. We just got to kind of figure this out and just be really careful driving home. Apparently, if you just jam on the brake long enough, it will stop eventually. And so we finish our meal and get out in the parking lot. And I drive around the parking lot. It's empty by this point. A couple times, do a couple test stops. They're stopping. We're fine. Okay, good. So 50-mile, about an hour-long trip. We're driving out of town, and we see a Dairy Queen on the side. And so we say, hey, you know, it's a long trip. He's medicated, so we should stop over and just pick up some ice cream before we take off. It's actually pretty busy for a Dairy Queen on a Sunday night. And so we pull in, and there is one spot right in front of the doors at the Dairy Queen. And so I'm pulling in there, and I try and press the brake. Same thing. There might as well have been a cinder block underneath the brake pedal because it was not moving. And so the whole thing kind of happened in slow motion. My front tires roll over the curb, over the sidewalk, and just my car just burst through the front doors of this Dairy Queen. And same thing, I go about 8 feet, and then the car finally stops. And so I just immediately just back up, get in the parking spot. And this is surreal. This is completely surreal. So my heart is just pounding as fast as it can. And we look in the windows, and everybody's still just doing their thing. Nobody even really noticed. And so we both think to each other, we don't say anything, but we both think, should we just back out and just speed away? Just go hide in the dark of the winter night? And before we can even say a word to each other, I'm already getting out of the car, walking up to the front doors. Turns out that it's closed already, and because I try and open the doors, and they're locked, but all the glass is shattered out, so I can just reach in and open the door and let myself in. So I go in there, and I eventually find a manager and talk to the manager. And the manager takes down all my information, tells me she needs to call the cops because she needs to file the accident report. And so me and Sean help ourselves to some dilly bars while we're waiting for the cop to show up. So we end up meeting the officers out front. And fortunately, at this point in my life, I had my EMT certification. So that meant I had a little card in my wallet. But more importantly, I had big plates that said across the bottom of them, EMT, emergency EMT. The same place you'd see on any ambulance driving around any part of Montana. And I actually hadn't been working as an EMT for about 6 months. It was the summer prior that I had been doing that. And so I was able to, when the cops showed up, the first thing they asked me was, so where are you an EMT out of? And so I shyly reply, Missoula County, but I'm not currently practicing. And so then I kind of just quickly explained my story about my faulty brakes and how I'm no good at changing brakes, apparently. And then the next thing that the cop asked me is, every driver's worst nightmare. So, how much have you had to drink tonight? And to where I can still point to the steakhouse. I said, I had just one beer right there with my meal. And that was it. I just left it at that. And the cop wryly says to me, yeah, I can smell it on you. And so then, at that point, I just need to go get my registration, and I don't know if he's going to breathalyze me. I'm not really too worried about it because I really only did have one beer, but I probably did smell like it, and I'm sure I was sweating profusely. And so I go over to the passenger side of my car and get out my registration and my insurance. And when I open the door, I have the officer right there, and he stops me. Whoa, 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 whoa! There's a heavy smell of marijuana emanating from your car right now. To where at that point, I just step back. And I let my buddy Sean he jumps in and says, oh yeah, well I'm legally entitled to smoke in the passenger seat of a car, yada, yada, yada. So he does his spiel. And at this moment I realize the picture that's being painted in the officers' heads. These young college hoodlums drive 50 miles to another town, get drunk and stoned, and just drive through the front of an ice cream shop. This is the start of a really bad joke. And so I realized at that exact moment that I need to take handle of this situation and kind of guide the reality that's actually occurring right there. And so I immediately just re-explained the whole story. Don't bring beer or anything else into it, because really that had very little to do with this accident. I wasn't drinking when I changed my brakes or anything like that, thankfully. And when everything kind of finished up, it took me about an hour from when I burst through the front of the Dairy Queen to when the cops let me off scot-free, basically, just driving home with my brakes halfway functional. You know, they just kind of said, good luck to you, man, and sent me on my way. You're an EMT. You get hurt, you can figure it out, you know. And so about a week later, I get a bill in the mail from, is that 7 minutes? Okay. I get a bill in the mail from Dairy Queen that's about $3,000. And so that's actually, you know, the cost of the door and everything. And so basically this, what should have saved me about $300 ended up costing me roughly 10 times that much. But it was really a good lesson, and that's something with having so many accidents in your life, you get good at kind of dealing with situations off the cuff like this. I think there's really a lot to be said for that, for the people that actually experience accidents and the people that put themselves in the place where accidents can happen to you. There's a lot to be said for people like that. It's a great character building activity, and I truly encourage each one of you to get out there and let some accidents happen to you. Thank you so much.
You're hearing the courtship sounds of one of the rarest birds in the United States. There are fewer than 5,000 left. So, on November 12, 2014, the Gunnison sage grouse was listed as threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Most of these birds live in the Gunnison Basin of southwest Colorado, but their concentration in such a small area means humans have a big impact. Oil and gas production, the development of ranchettes, and an ongoing drought have pushed the Gunnison sage grouse to the edge. Male Gunnison sage grouse are star performers. They gather in sagebrush in spring and strut together, fanning long, spiky tail feathers. The 5-pound grouse snap their heads forward, flipping what looks like a long ponytail of feathers above their heads. At the same moment, large air sacs on their chests plump forward, making these plopping sounds. Females mate with the most impressive males. Political and legal wrangling are bound to follow the sage grouse's listing as threatened. But experience shows that in the long term, this new level of protection could enable the population to recover, if it's coupled with cooperation among competing interests. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
It's about 53 minutes after the hour. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 5th, and we're going to listen to another selection from the House Jacks. They'll be playing this Thursday, January 8th, 7:30 at the Jack.
I confess my faults, but I won't take the guilt. I will wipe my hand right through this house of cards you're trying to build me. If you really want me to, I will pack my things and go. But you don't want me to. You profess your love, but you give me no quarter. You call to say you're coming home. I hear you making tracks across the border. If you really want me to, I will let you slip away. Come on. You don't want me to. And if the skies been open, the ground might shake. Ain't no fear can make me forsake you. I know all your troubles, and I tell you that I'll still take you. Now listen, you can fall in love, but you climb into love. You can drench the earth with holy water, but you work the soil with a pick and shovel. If you really want me to, I will let the fields go dry. Come on, you don't want me to. So let the skies split open, let the whole earth quake. Take you. Oh, don't worry.
Don't you worry yourself so much. Don't worry. Don't worry yourself so much. 'Cause the sky could split open and the ground might shake. But I will never forsake you. Baby, you got some troubles.
Selection here from the House Jacks a cappella. At its finest, they'll be at the Jack this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and info at junojazzandclassics.org or thejack.org. Tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, Mark Schwann will be here with a preview of his talk on Thursday about birding on Gamble Island. Samantha Weinstein and Mandy Malott will be here to offer details about upcoming inaugural activities. We'll highlight National Mentoring Month and Big Brothers Big Sisters. And Lori Craig will be here with a preview of this year's Fireside Lecture Series at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more tomorrow here on the Juno Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Little Bela Fleck and Chick Corea right here. As for the weather, tonight increasing clouds, windy, lows 12 to 20, southeast wind 30 miles per hour with gusts to around 45. Tuesday, cloudy, windy, chance of snow, highs around 25, northeast wind 25 miles per hour with gusts to 35 miles per hour. Wednesday, cloudy, windy, chance of snow with periods of freezing drizzle. Highs 27 to 33, northeast wind 15 to 25 miles per hour. And Thursday, no call for precip, cloudy, highs around 30. And going into the weekend, rain likely, highs around 33, lows 26 to 32. A nice low high, though, there around 33, hopefully snow up at Eagle Crest. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.